The long and short of it is we have to look at what additional steps, measures could be taken.
Weighing action against Myanmar, it's Thursday, December 16th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, former Afghan president speaks. UN urges support for refugees. Australia reopens for foreign nationals. Women learning cryptocurrency. Yarn street art. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Wednesday it is necessary to look at applying additional measures against Myanmar, where 10 months after a military coup, the crisis has only continued to worsen. Speaking to reporters alongside Malaysian Foreign Minister Saifuddin Abdullah during a visit to Kuala Lumpur, Blinken said the goal of actions by individual countries or a collective effort would be to pressure the regime to put the country back on a democratic trajectory.
The long and short of it is we have to look at what additional steps, measures could be taken, try to move things in a better direction, and that's something that that we're looking at. We continue also to look actively at terminations of the actions taken in Myanmar and whether they constitute genocide, and that's something we're looking at very actively right now.
Blinken said ASEAN's five-point consensus plan that the junta signed on to needs to be implemented, referencing the Association of Southeast Asian Nations. Saifuddin said the situation in Myanmar will be an important part of the agenda when ASEAN foreign ministers meet next month, and that a more detailed plan for the roadmap is necessary. During a speech in Jakarta, Indonesia, Blinken called on China to stop aggressive actions in the Indo-Pacific region. Beijing has already rejected Blinken's assertions, as VOA's Cindy Sain reports.
Antony Blinken is on his first visit to Southeast Asia as Secretary of State, starting off his trip in Indonesia. It's a heavyweight country in a critical region, says Brian Harding of the United States Institute of Peace.
It's clear that Southeast Asia, sitting at the heart of the Indo-Pacific region, is really the region of the world where U.S.-China strategic competition is playing out most acutely. But there are also innumerable reasons why the United States should be interested in Southeast Asia with 650 million people, a $3 trillion economy. So Secretary Blinken choosing to travel to Indonesia first is the right move.
Freedom of navigation in the South China Sea is a focal point of Blinken's visit to an area where, he said, China's actions threaten the movement of those $3 trillion in goods annually. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
That's why there's so much concern. From Northeast Asia to Southeast Asia, and from the Mekong River to the Pacific Islands, about Beijing's aggressive actions. Claiming open seas as their own. Distorting open markets through subsidies to its state-run companies. Denying the exports or revoking deals for countries whose policies it does not agree with. Engaging in illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing activities. Countries across the region want this behavior to change. We do too.
China was quick to refute Blinken's criticism. Wang Wenbin is the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson.
I would like to point out that the U.S., on the one hand, dramatically plays up the so-called China threat while claiming to have no intention to start a conflict with China on the other. This kind of self-contradictory practice does not accord with the spirit of the recent meeting between our two heads of state and will struggle to gain approval from the countries in the region.
Confrontations with Chinese vessels are frequent in the disputed South China Sea. Blinken made clear the U.S. wants to ensure people and countries in the region have the freedom to decide on their own futures and partners. Here again, Brian Harding, who spoke with VOA.
Southeast Asian countries, more than anything, do not want to choose between the United States and China or any of their other partners. It is inevitable that the United States, China, and also Japan, India, Australia are going to be deep and important players for these countries. And trying to force them to choose is a bad policy. But setting out what the United States brings to the table, that's a good policy. And that's what he did, I think.
Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Blinken postponed Thailand trip after a member of U.S. traveling press tests positive for COVID-19. Charting the future of China's infrastructure projects in Africa after a decade of lending. Analysts say new COVID pills could be a game changer for North Korea. China promotes vaccines around the world, but critics point to lower efficacy. Myanmar journalists reported to have died in army custody. Get complete coverage on these headlines, plus more stories on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia on this Thursday. The Taliban didn't take the Afghan capital. They were invited, says the man who issued the invitation. In an Associated Press interview, former Afghan President Hamid Karzai offered some of the first insights into the secret and sudden departure of Afghan President Ashraf Ghani and how he came to invite the Taliban into the city to protect the population.
It was a request to come in and protect the population so that the country, the city doesn't fall into chaos and the unwanted elements would probably loot the country, loot shops. So it was an automatic process subsequent to that, an inevitability.
Karzai was adamant that there would have been an agreement for a peaceful transition had Ghani remained in Kabul. Asked to describe the Taliban, Karzai said, "I would describe them as Afghans, but Afghans who have gone through a very difficult period in their lives, as all other Afghans have done for the past 40 years. Karzai added that the Afghans have made mistakes on all sides, in which the international community and those who interacted with us have made tremendous mistakes, and it's time for all of us to realize that and to look back at the mistakes that we all made to make it better," he said. The Kremlin says Chinese President Xi Jinping is supporting Russian President Vladimir Putin in his push to get Western security guarantees precluding NATO's eastward expansion. Putin and Xi spoke on Wednesday as Moscow faces heightened tensions with the West over a Russian troop buildup near Ukraine's border. The Kremlin has denied harboring plans to invade its neighbor, and Putin has demanded guarantees that NATO will not expand to Ukraine or deploy troops and weapons there. The Russian leader said he plans to meet with Xi in person in Beijing in February and will attend the 2022 Winter Olympics taking place in China's capital. Still to come on VOA Asia, UN urges support for refugees. Happening now in Asia, fire officials in Hong Kong say firefighters have contained a blaze that broke out at the World Trade Center in the popular Causeway Bay shopping district, trapping dozens of people on the rooftop. Authorities say at least 13 people were hospitalized for treatment. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. The United Nations' top refugee official is urging nations to strengthen their support for people fleeing conflict, persecution, and violence, and to keep their borders open to people in need of international protection. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva at the opening of a two-day high-level officials meeting on refugees.
In a video, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, sets the scene for this two-day virtual event. The meeting is the first follow-up to the Global Refugee Forum held 2 years ago. Nearly 1,400 pledges were made then to better support refugees and host communities. Senior government officials, refugees, and various partners are here to take stock of how many pledges have been kept. High Commissioner Grandi gives the global picture a mixed review. He says countries are doing better at including refugees in national COVID-19 healthcare responses and in providing protection and greater livelihood opportunities. He says progress has been made toward eradicating statelessness and in the field of education. He warns, however, that too many countries are turning their backs on people in need of safety and protection.
To this end, I must repeat my grave concerns regarding certain trends in some of the world's industrialized countries, including closed borders, sometimes very violent pushbacks, the construction of walls and barriers, the outsourcing of international legal and moral obligations concerning people's right to seek asylum.
The UNHCR reports at least 83.4 million people have been forcibly displaced around the world, and of that number, 26.4 million are refugees. Developing countries host about 85% of the world's refugees. Grandi is calling on wealthier countries to assume a greater share of this responsibility. He also is appealing for more third country solutions to intractable refugee problems.
Resettlement is, of course, a key avenue, and I'm grateful to all those states that have continued to maintain or increase their resettlement quotas over the past years, as well as the United States of America for reinvigorating its resettlement program.
Officials attending the event will spotlight several key areas, including the response to the COVID-19 pandemic, climate action, and displacement. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Protesters across Myanmar have called on the international community to target the country's important oil and gas revenues with sanctions to stop what they say are abuses by the military. The military seized power in a coup in February. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Welcome back to VOA Asia. The South Korean government announced its intention to reintroduce stricter social distancing measures Wednesday as daily coronavirus infections hit a new record of 7,850 cases. It was the fourth time this month the daily tally topped 7,000 cases. Authorities are set to restrict social gatherings and cut the opening hours of certain businesses to fight the surge that has led to a spike in hospitalizations and deaths. The country's death toll currently stands at 4,456 after 70 virus patients died within a 24-hour period, while a record 964 patients are in critical or serious condition. After almost 2 years of strict COVID-19 controls, Australia has reopened its borders to skilled migrants, students, and backpackers. Australia banned most foreign nationals in March 2020 under some of the world's toughest coronavirus restrictions. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
Holders of various working and student visas are now allowed into Australia without requiring an exemption if they're fully vaccinated. Japanese and South Korean nationals are also permitted into the country. Australia had already relaxed travel restrictions to allow the return of citizens, permanent residents and their families. All arrivals will have to follow the quarantine rules of the state or territory to which they travel. There are no entry restrictions on travellers entering the states of New South Wales and Victoria. However, international passengers need government approval to travel to Western Australia. Industries across the country, from agriculture to hospitality, that rely on short-term workers have been struggling to find staff since the country closed its borders in March 2020. They hope the reopening of Australia's international borders will ease the worker shortage. Universities are also preparing to welcome back overseas students. Yongjin Liu has arrived from Hong Kong to study at the University of New South Wales.
It's actually a mixed feeling of very exciting, but also because everything is new here, and this is my first time to live in a foreign country, so a little bit nervous.
It's also so-called Freedom Day for the unvaccinated in the state of New South Wales, where many restrictions will end for those who've not been inoculated. New South Wales Health Minister Brad Hazzard is expecting coronavirus infections to increase, but says there are no plans to reimpose restrictions.
Once the unvaccinated are mixing in with the vaccinated, you'd have to expect the numbers will increase even further, and that's worrying because that puts pressure on our doctors and our nurses. We're not about to start backflipping on issues that we've promised the community will do.
Australia is relaxing disease control measures despite rising infections and concerns about the effectiveness of vaccines against the Omicron variant. New South Wales Wednesday recorded 1,360 new COVID-19 infections, its highest daily total since mid-September. Australia has detected about 230,000 COVID-19 cases since the start of the pandemic. Some 2,100 people have died. The Health Department has said that 89.5% of the eligible Australian population is fully vaccinated. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Making headlines in Asia, six French parliamentarians arrived in Taiwan Wednesday morning for a five-day visit that will include a meeting with President Tsai Ing-wen. China says Taiwan is one of its provinces and should not have official government exchanges with other nations. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Like many countries worldwide, Nigeria has been recording massive growth in its information technology sector, but only one-fifth of IT workers are women, according to government figures. Aid groups are trying to help women and girls enter the IT world by teaching them about blockchain technology and cryptocurrencies. Timothy Obiezu reports.
60-year-old Elizabeth Onaji arrives for a weekly cryptocurrency training for women in Nigeria's capital city, Abuja. Since enrolling for the training in June, she says her knowledge about blockchain technology has improved greatly and that she's propagating the message to other women.
I believe that this is a worldwide project or business. Nigeria should not be the odd one out. We should also key into the global trend.
Nigerian crypto educator Janet Katio runs for blockchain classes. She began free blockchain education for women in 2017 and says hundreds of Nigerian women have benefited from the training so far.
I'm always interested in teaching women so that they can also be part of what is happening in the technology space. You understand? And then you come to see a lot of women, mothers, are interested, are already taking this blockchain technology and making life out of it. Some are housewife, some are even working.
But Nigeria's technology sector, like many other sectors, has a poor female representation. The country's Statistics Bureau says less than a fifth of IT workers are women, despite major growth in the industry in the last decade. People like Katio are trying to address this problem with blockchain education for women. Nigeria is Africa's biggest blockchain market. During a recent class, she partnered with the non-profit T'Challa Foundation to teach women about an African cryptocurrency called T'Challa, which was introduced in November. Messiah Obuago is a co-founder of the T'Challa Foundation, the non-profit that introduced the cryptocurrency.
T'Challa is a hero that is coming up from Africa and to save Africa. And what we're trying to say is that it's time for Africa to have a voice in the blockchain space, and also Africa to have a voice when it comes to cryptocurrency.
However, Ubuagu says government policies could prove a challenge to the advancement of blockchain technology in Nigeria.
When you speak to people about cryptocurrency, they will try to remind you the government said it's not good for us. You know, it's a big barrier, and people tend to follow that.
In February this year, Nigerian authorities warned citizens against cryptocurrencies, saying they were unstable and insecure and often led to the loss of investments. Authorities in October launched a digital currency known as the e-Naira. But despite the risks and odds, women like Katio and Elizabeth say they will be promoting cryptocurrency training for more women to get involved. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Finally on VOA Asia, yarn bombing is part street art, part graffiti, and part activism. A new art trend in New York City takes the age-old craft of crocheting to the streets, where traditionally walls and fences have been serving as canvases for graffiti artists. Nina Vishnova has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Knit graffiti, textile street art, street-style crochet. There's no one term that depicts the new art form precisely. Nothing that can really encompass all of the meanings of yarn bombing. The new art form came to be almost by accident. The owner of a small boutique in Houston, Texas, wrapped her front door handle with fuzzy yarn. Her customers loved the idea, and soon things spun out of control.
I don't know how many pounds of yarn. I mean, we're somewhere in the 60 pounds of yarn, I think.
Nomi Lawrence is a professional florist and one of the best yarn bombers in New York City. Her crocheted flowers decorate dull walls and fences around the city. One of her newest compositions, called Flowers of the Turtle Island, pays homage to the indigenous Lenape people who used to live on the island of Manhattan. They believed the world rested on the back of a giant turtle and was as beautiful as wildflowers.
The last mural that was here, I still have two of the large flowers, like 5-6 foot flowers. The 8 foot dahlia went to Milan for an exhibition and then it was auctioned off for charity. So I don't know who has it, but it was great that it had a second life.
Lawrence and her supporters hope to decorate the city and engage people.
I want to touch, so we try to put them on the opposite side, so when you pass your hand, mm-hmm. you don't hurt yourself.
Florence Bradley learned to crochet when she was 10. Mm-hmm. Alex Reynoso started even earlier. They both agree knitting for the city and others is a different experience.
All the possibilities, like you can make clothing, you can make items for the house, spread, blanket and stuff like that, baby items, and then this.
It just really unifies us because we have that common, like no pun intended, but we have like that common thread in common, and we just can create really fun things, especially when you find someone that has like the same like appreciation or aesthetic. And like your minds kind of click. It's very fun when you find that group of people.
Street lamps, trees, benches, bridges, even statues. They make sure their knitwork hugs everything and keeps it warm and cozy. The famous bull from Wall Street, not a problem. Decorate street lamps with rainbow knits for the annual Pride Parade, easy. The most peaceful and the coziest form of activism, and definitely one of the most beautiful. The one disadvantage of yarn bombing is its short lifespan. A couple of months outdoors, and even the brightest acrylic fades. Of course, the artists need permission from local authorities and private owners to decorate many of the objects. Lawrence usually gets a year-long clearance for her projects.
Part of the responsibility of having something in the public domain is the upkeep.
Illegal crocheting in the street is considered vandalism. And though New York City police have far more important issues to tend to, Lawrence needs to be sure. Her knit projects bring the city nothing but joy, a splash of color, and maybe a little extra warmth. For Nina Vishnyova in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook. That's all the time we have on VOA Asia. Make sure to find us on Facebook, VOA Asia, on Twitter at VOA Asia, and on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Jessica Stone. I'm Chris Gaskill in Washington. Enjoy the day.